Right now, there are thousands of die-hard mountain-loving Coloradans who are doing something that, I mean, even 10 years ago would have seemed completely unthinkable.
Oh, absolutely unthinkable.
Right. They're willingly packing up, they're abandoning their legendary 300 days of sunshine, and they're moving to like one of the grayest, rainiest corners of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, and you know what the most surprising part of this whole demographic shift is?
What's that?
They're actually paying a massive premium to do it.
Which is wild because, I mean, it really challenges everything we kind of just assume about why people move.
Does because the traditional narrative of the American West, right, has always been about moving toward the sun.
Right, toward that wide open frontier.
Exactly. And for decades, the Front Range of Colorado was like the ultimate destination for that specific dream. You moved to Denver or, Boulder because you wanted that rugged individualism.
Yeah, the endless blue skies.
Right. And the ability to just point to a pristine 14,000 foot peak and say, I'm hiking that this weekend.
But the reality of living on the Front Range right now, like in 2026, is it feels miles away from that frontier fantasy.
Miles away. It's completely different now.
And the people making this move, you know, they aren't leaving because they suddenly hate the mountains. They still love them.
Oh, of course.
But they're leaving because the friction required to just like enjoy those mountains has become completely exhausting.
Exhausting is the perfect word for it.
I mean, if you're listening to this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're sitting in absolute gridlock on I-25 or I-70, just trying to get to a trailhead that's already at capacity by what, 6 a.m.?
Or earlier, yeah.
Right? And then you're dealing with an August sky that's so thick with wildfire smoke, you can't even safely walk your dog, let alone run a trail.
Yeah, the smoke has really changed the calculus.
It really has. And on top of all of that, the cost of living has just skyrocketed to the point where you're paying this massive luxury premium just to experience that daily friction.
And that friction, that's really the catalyst here. It creates this very specific type of geographic burnout.
Geographic burnout, I like that term.
Yeah, because you still love the landscape, but the environment and the infrastructure surrounding it's just fundamentally changed how you interact with it.
Right. It forces a total reassessment of your life.
Exactly. People start looking for like an escape hatch, a place where they can reclaim that outdoor lifestyle without all the overwhelming density and, frankly, the environmental anxiety.
And increasingly, that search is leading them straight north to places like Bellingham, Washington,
Yeah, up to Whatcom County.
which is exactly the mission of our deep dive today. If you're listening to this and you are that exhausted outdoorsy Coloradan who's looking at the Pacific Northwest, we are going to strip away the whole glossy vacation mode fantasy of relocation.
Because the vacation fantasy is very different from the day-to-day reality.
So different. So we're pulling directly from some highly candid 2026 relocation data and market analyses, specifically looking at a no-hype relocation guide by Gennaro Schaffer of Bellwether Real Estate.
It's a great source, really unflinching.
Yeah, it's so honest. We are going to run the real math on the equity transfer. We're going to break down the honest and sometimes brutal climate trade-offs and map out the actual logistics of buying a house two states away.
Right, because we really need to establish right out of the gate, this is not some magical cash out your Denver equity and retire on the cheap scenario.
Not at all.
No, we have to look at this strictly through a highly pragmatic lifestyle and taxes lens. Relocating to Bellingham is, it's not about financial arbitrage in the traditional sense.
Right, you're not moving to find some deeply undervalued housing market where your dollar just magically goes twice as far.
Exactly. You are moving to alleviate this specific lifestyle friction we just talked about. But to actually make that transition work, you have to be willing to confront some very stark financial realities about how your wealth functions across state lines.
Okay, well, let's just jump straight into that financial reality check then. Because the first illusion that needs to be shattered here is the idea that you're moving to a quote unquote cheaper market.
Yeah, the data on this is incredibly unforgiving.
It really is. So if we look at the 2026 Denver Metro median sale price, we're sitting roughly around what, $585,000?
Right around there.
But if you look at Bellingham, the median sale price is actually higher. It's hovering around $660,000.
Yeah, which is a shock to a lot of people.
Seriously. So for the vast majority of Front Range transplants, this is not a step down in cost. It's a lateral move at best. And for many, it's a pretty noticeable step up.
Exactly. I mean, unless you're coming from a highly premium Front Range pocket, say, like a historic neighborhood in Boulder or one of those very specific high-end foothills communities where a standard home easily clears $1 million, you're going to feel that price difference immediately.
Right.
If you're coming from a standard Denver suburb or a town like Fort Collins or Colorado Springs, Bellingham's housing market is going to look intensely competitive and undeniably expensive.
Yeah, the entry price for just a standard single-family home with decent proximity to the trails or the water is really steep.
It is.
So if I'm a buyer and I'm looking at a more expensive house at $660,000, I mean, and I really coming out ahead, how does the math actually work for anyone making this move if the mortgage is higher?
Well, this is where it gets fascinating, because the data highlights this massive structural difference in how these two states treat your money once you actually live there. And it all hinges on what we can call the tax flip.
The tax flip. Okay, unpack that for me.
So the financial calculus of this relocation shifts entirely away from just the upfront asset pricing, right? It focuses heavily on your ongoing cash flow.
Oh, interesting.
Because the cost of living isn't just the principal balance on your mortgage. It's the invisible recurring drag of state taxation. So Colorado utilizes a flat state income tax rate, which currently sits at 4.40%. Washington State, on the other hand, has absolutely zero state income tax.
Zero. I just want to emphasize that for the listener. Zero.
Nothing.
Nothing on your W-2 wages, nothing on your small business revenue, and crucially for a huge demographic of movers, zero tax on retirement income.
Exactly. No state taxes on Social Security, no taxes on pensions, and no taxes when you draw down your IRA or your 401k.
Wow.
Yeah, the magnitude of that 0% rate just cannot be overstated when we run the long-term math. So let's look at three distinct scenarios to see how this actually functions in the real world.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, consider a remote tech worker, someone who kept their Denver salary but relocated to Bellingham, and let's say they're making $150,000 a year.
Pretty standard for that industry, yeah.
Right. By escaping Colorado's 4.4% tax, that worker is keeping an additional $6,600 a year directly in their pocket.
Oh, wow.
And over a 10-year period, without even factoring in, you know, salary increases or compound interest if that money's invested, that is $66,000 of retained wealth simply for changing their zip code.
That's a new car or a massive chunk of a down payment.
Exactly. Now let's look at a dual income household or maybe a small business owner netting $250,000 a year. That's $11,000 a year in pure tax savings.
Insane.
Right. And perhaps the most dramatic shift is the retiree.
Oh, let's talk about the retirees, because so many people move for retirement.
Yeah. Let's say you're 65. You've built up a substantial 401k over a long career in Denver, and you decide to start drawing down $120,000 a year to fund your retirement lifestyle.
Okay.
In Colorado, the state is taking roughly $5,200 of that distribution every single year. In Washington, you keep all of it.
All of it.
All of it. So over a 20-year retirement, that is over $100,000 of liquidity that stays in your portfolio, continuing to generate returns rather than going straight to the State Department of Revenue.
Okay, so that creates a massive injection of liquidity into your monthly budget. But, and I know there's a but here, Washington State still has to pave its roads, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They have to fund their schools, maintain their infrastructure. They don't have an income tax, so where are they getting that revenue?
Right, they have to capture it elsewhere. And they do it primarily through the property tax. That is the catch to the zero income tax environment.
Okay, yeah. Because Colorado has historically benefited from notoriously low property taxes.
Very low, yeah.
Like the effective rate in Colorado hovers around 0.5% due to some decades-old legislation that capped residential property tax burdens.
Exactly. But Washington has no such luxury. In Whatcom County, where Bellingham sits, the effective property tax rate is roughly 0.9%.
Oh, so the rate nearly doubles.
It does. Let's apply that to the housing prices we just talked about so we can see what the actual damage is.
Okay.
On that median $660,000 Bellingham home, a 0.9% rate means you're paying roughly $5,900 a year in property taxes.
Ouch.
Right. And if you had a home of that exact same $660,000 value in Colorado at the 0.5% rate, your property tax would only be about $3,300.
Okay, so by moving to Bellingham, you're taking on an additional $2,600 in annual property tax burden.
Basically, yes.
So if I'm buying a more expensive house and I'm paying almost double in property taxes, am I really coming out ahead just because of the income tax?
Well, that's where you have to weigh the cash flow.
I think the best way to visualize this trade-off is, like, imagine you are going to a really exclusive high-end restaurant.
Okay, I like this.
The housing price, that $660,000 median, is the expensive cover charge just to get in the door.
Right.
And the high property tax, that's like a mandatory recurring coat check fee that feels a bit steep every single time you pay it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But the zero income tax, that is the open bar once you are inside.
Yes.
The more you eat and drink, meaning, you know, the higher your W-2 income is, or the more you draw down from your retirement accounts, the more that expensive cover charge pays for itself.
That is a perfect analogy. The people who benefit most from that open bar are the ones generating significant annual cash flow.
Makes sense.
If we go back to our dual-income household making $250,000, they're saving $11,000 on income taxes, right? And they're paying a $2,600 penalty on property taxes.
So they're still way ahead.
Exactly. Their net gain is still over $8,300 a year. Mm-hmm. For high earners, the math heavily, heavily favors Washington. Yeah. But the dynamic shifts drastically if you are a pure asset holder with low income.
Let's explore that edge case, actually, because it's a very common reality in Colorado.
It is, yeah.
Let's say you bought a modest house in a Denver suburb back in, like, 1995 for $150,000. Today, that house is worth $700,000.
Very common scenario.
Right. You have a massive amount of equity, but maybe you're working a job that pays $60,000 a year. In Colorado, your income tax burden is low, around $2,600, and your property tax on that $700K house is also relatively low, maybe around $3,500.
Okay, so if that person takes their $700,000 in equity, they move to Bellingham and they buy a house in cash. They eliminate a $2,600 income tax bill, but they take on a $6,300 property tax bill.
Oh.
Right, they actually move backward mathematically.
Wow. So the Washington tax structure severely penalizes individuals with modest incomes who just happen to be sitting on highly valued real estate.
Exactly. While it massively rewards high cash flow individuals, it's a system that really demands you are either actively earning a high wage or actively drawing down large taxable retirement funds to make the math work in your favor.
And we should probably address the elephant in the room regarding Washington's tax code here, because anyone researching this move is going to immediately stumble across headlines about the capital gains tax.
Oh, yes. The infamous capital gains tax.
Right. If Washington has no income tax, how do they have a capital gains tax? Doesn't the IRS consider capital gains a form of income?
Well, the legality of whether it constitutes an income tax or an excise tax was actually fiercely debated all the way up to the Washington State Supreme Court.
Really?
Yeah. And they ultimately upheld it as an excise tax on the sale or exchange of capital assets.
Okay, semantics.
Right. But setting the legal semantics aside, we just need to look at how this tax actually functions mechanically for someone relocating. It is an incredibly narrow, highly targeted 7% tax.
Right. So it doesn't just hit every single time you sell a stock for a profit on Robinhood.
No, not at all.
It only triggers on long-term capital gains that exceed a very specific threshold, which I think, adjusted for inflation, sits roughly around $270,000 in a single calendar year.
Exactly. And that is $270,000 of pure profit, not the total sale price of the asset.
That's a huge distinction.
It is. Furthermore, the exemptions are what truly matter for the average transplant here. The tax completely exempts the sale of residential real estate.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it completely exempts retirement accounts. So if you sell your Denver home and walk away with $500,000 in pure equity profit, the Washington capital gains tax does not touch a single penny of it.
That's incredible.
Right. If you liquidate $300,000 from your IRA, the tax does not apply. Unless you are liquidating a massive non-retirement stock portfolio or maybe selling a highly valued privately owned business in a single year, this tax will effectively remain completely invisible to you.
So the mechanics of these tax laws act as like this invisible filter for migration.
Yes, a very strong filter.
Because if you look at who benefits the most high-earning remote W-2 employees and wealthy retirees drawing down massive 401ks, you are looking at the exact demographic that is currently flooding into Bellingham.
Precisely.
The tax structure doesn't just encourage migration. It meticulously curates the economic class of the people arriving.
That's very true.
You aren't getting people moving there to scrape by in a cheap starter home. You're getting an influx of highly affluent, remote-capable professionals who want to optimize their tax burden while massively upgrading their physical environment.
And upgrading the environment is really the ultimate goal here. But that brings us to the reality of what that environment actually entails.
Right, because when you pay that Bellingham cover charge we talked about and you navigate the property tax, you have to look out the window of your new $660,000 home and confront what your money just bought.
And the very first thing you'll notice is that it definitely did not buy you Colorado sunshine.
No, it did not. This is the great climate exchange. And according to the relocation data from the source, this is the single biggest point of failure for transplants.
Oh, by far.
It is the number one reason people who make this leap end up quietly packing their bags and moving back to the Front Range 2 years later.
Yeah, the bounce back rate is real.
Because you're taking a demographic of people who are practically solar powered.
Exactly. Coloradans build their entire identities around the fact that they get 300 days of sunshine a year.
Right. They are so used to that intense high-altitude UV radiation where you can just sit on a patio in February in a t-shirt while surrounded by snow because the sun is just baking you.
Yeah. So the physiological and honestly, the psychological shock of losing that solar intensity just cannot be minimized.
It's huge.
When you move to Bellingham, you are adopting a true marine climate. We are talking about 36 to 40 inches of rain annually.
Which sounds like a lot.
It is, but the volume of rain is actually less impactful than the duration of the cloud cover. You are entering an environment that experiences long, continuous, unbroken stretches of gray skies from November all the way through March.
Wow.
Yeah. It is a phenomenon locals often refer to as the big dark.
The big dark. 5 months of gray. Let's just pause on that reality for a second.
It's heavy.
Are Colorado folks really prepared for 5 months of a gray sky? I mean, if you're used to the bright blue winter sky of Denver, waking up in late January to your 40th consecutive day of low-hanging slate gray clouds with a constant mist falling that requires a monumental mental adjustment.
Monumental.
It sounds a bit like putting a sun-loving plant into a dark, damp closet and just expecting it to bloom.
That's exactly what it is. And the lack of vitamin D, combined with the shift in circadian rhythms, it triggers very real seasonal affective challenges for transplant.
Oh, I'm sure.
However, the people who survive this move, they don't focus on the loss of the sun. They focus entirely on the physical and environmental gains of the marine climate.
Okay, what are the gains?
Well, those gains are profound, starting with the simple reality of winter maintenance. You essentially never have to shovel a driveway again.
Chime me up.
Right. You are no longer dealing with the bone-chilling, negative 10-degree Fahrenheit deep freezes that just paralyze the Front Range.
And you completely escape the Chinook to blizzard whiplash.
Oh, yes.
Because anyone living in Colorado knows exactly what that means. It's 65 degrees and sunny on a Tuesday afternoon, right? You're biking in shorts.
Right.
You go to sleep. The barometer plummets, and by Wednesday morning, you are digging your car out of 18 inches of concrete-heavy snow while the wind howls at 40 miles an hour. It is a violent, chaotic weather system.
It is violent.
Yeah.
But Bellingham's climate, by contrast, is defined by its incredible stability.
Stability. That sounds nice.
It is. The proximity to the Pacific Ocean acts as this massive thermal regulator. So the temperature rarely drops below the high 20s in the dead of winter. And it rarely climbs past the low 80s at the absolute peak of summer. The extremes simply do not exist.
So treating the Colorado climate for the Pacific Northwest is, it's really like treating a roller coaster for a lazy river.
I love that. A lazy river.
Right. The roller coaster is dramatic, it's thrilling, but eventually the sheer violence of the ride leaves you completely exhausted.
Yeah.
The lazy river is mild, it's damp, and it is predictably consistent. It might not give you an adrenaline rush in January, but it also isn't going to throw you around.
Exactly. But the true value of that lazy river, and really the primary driver of this modern wave of climate migration, reveals itself in the summer.
The summer.
Because when you move to Bellingham, you completely eliminate the 95-degree, bone-dry, high-desert heat waves that bake the Front Range from July through September.
Which are getting worse every year.
They are. And more critically, you escape the suffocating reality of the modern August wildfire smoke season.
Yeah, the smoke is the tipping point for so many people.
It's awful.
Because the geography of the Front Range essentially acts like a massive catching bowl for particulate matter.
Right.
When the fires burn in California or Oregon or the Colorado High Country, the prevailing winds push that smoke right up against the Rockies and it just settles over Denver and Boulder.
And it sits there.
It just sits there. You get days, sometimes weeks, where the air quality index spikes into the hazardous zones. You have ash falling on your car. The sky turns this like dystopian shade of orange, and you literally cannot open your windows or let your children plug outside.
And the psychological toll of that environmental anxiety is immense.
Immense.
Now, Bellingham is not entirely immune to smoke. They do experience drift during particularly bad regional fire years in British Columbia or Eastern Washington, but the frequency, the intensity, and the duration are a fraction of what Colorado endures.
Because of the ocean.
Exactly. The marine layer and the ocean breezes continually flush the air out. Clean, breathable, cool summer air is rapidly transitioning from just a basic expectation to a premium commodity.
Wow. And, you know, let's talk about the physical relief of dropping down to sea level, too.
Oh, that's a huge point.
Because we don't talk enough about the low-grade chronic stress that living at 5,280 feet places on the human body.
We really don't.
When you move from Denver to Bellingham, you are gaining roughly 17% more effective oxygen with every single breath. It feels like taking off a heavy weighted vest that you completely forgot you were wearing.
And the physiological benefits of that oxygen density are immediate. Transplants consistently report deeper, more restorative REM sleep.
I would love some of that.
Right. The chronic dehydration that plagues high altitude residents vanishes. The air is naturally humidified by the ocean, which means an end to the dry, cracking skin, the constant reliance on chapstick, and those spontaneous middle-of-the-night dry nosebleeds that are just a staple of Colorado winters.
Oh, man, the nosebleeds.
Yeah. And visually, you look around in January, and instead of a dormant, crispy brown landscape, everything is vibrant, lush, and aggressively green.
Aggressively green. But so if we connect this to the bigger picture, the survival mechanism for this transition really comes down to deliberate psychological framing, doesn't it?
It entirely does. The data suggests that transplants who try to white-knuckle their way through the gray winters, just, you know, waiting for the sun to come back, those are the ones who inevitably leave.
Because it's not coming back?
No, not for months. The ones who thrive actively reframe the winter. They don't view the dark, wet months as a punishment to be endured. They lean into it.
Nos.
It becomes a cozy, mossy, slow season. You invest in high-end Gore-Tex, you learn to appreciate the local coffee roaster culture, and you embrace the concept of hiking through a dripping emerald green cedar forest in a rain shell.
It's an identity shift.
Yes, exactly.
You are letting go of the sun-baked high desert aesthetic, and you're adopting a maritime temperate rainforest rhythm.
Which is beautiful in its own way.
It is. But that shift in identity leads us directly to the most practical question for these transplants. If I have to wear a rain shell for 5 months, what am I actually doing outside?
Right, the outdoorsy question.
Yeah, because the core identity of the Colorado transplant is outdoorsy. Mm. If they move to a rainy sea level town, are they sacrificing their weekend recreation?
This brings us to redefining what outdoorsy actually means in the Pacific Northwest. Mm. Because the fear of leaving the mountains behind is a massive psychological hurdle for these buyers.
It's huge.
But the reality is that Bellingham is arguably more densely packed with outdoor obsession than Denver. The geometry of how you interact with nature just completely changes.
The geometry, okay.
Let's start with what you keep, because you aren't actually losing the mountains. You just have to look an hour east to Mount Baker.
Okay, let's talk about Mount Baker, because the statistics regarding Mount Baker are, frankly, difficult for even seasoned Coloradans to comprehend.
They are staggering.
During the 1998-1999 season, Mount Baker set the world record for seasonal snowfall, receiving 11,140 inches.
Yeah, just wrap your head around that.
Let's just sit with that number for a second. 11,140 inches. That is 95 feet of snow in a single season.
It's almost unbelievable.
The volume of precipitation that the North Cascades rip out of the Pacific weather systems is just staggering. You are getting real, incredibly deep powder.
But the culture of how you access that powder is the polar opposite of the Colorado experience.
Right.
Mount Baker offers absolutely none of the corporate resort infrastructure that defines the I-70 corridor.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. There is no Vail glitz. There are no Aspen-level luxury boutiques at the base. There isn't even a high-speed gondola or a massive base village with heated sidewalks.
So what is it?
It is an unapologetically raw, unpretentious, locally driven mountain. It is entirely focused on the sport of skiing and snowboarding rather than the luxury consumption surrounding the sport.
Here's where it gets really interesting for the listener, though. There is no I-70 traffic jam.
Yes, the golden ticket.
You aren't spending 4 hours in your car, breathing exhaust fumes, just to ski chopped up, tracked out snow alongside 10,000 other frustrated people.
Not at all.
You drive an hour up a winding highway, you park in a muddy lot, and you ski massive, steep terrain.
And if you're a mountain biker, the transition is even more seamless. The relocation data heavily highlights Galbraith Mountain, which sits practically within the Bellingham city limits.
Oh, I've heard of Galbraith.
It's legendary. It offers a world-renowned, locally built and maintained trail network that is rideable almost year-round because the dense tree canopy protects the dirt from the heavy rain.
So the terrestrial recreation, the skiing, the biking, the hiking in the North Cascades and Chuckanut Mountains, it remains genuinely world class. You are not downgrading your mountain access.
No, you're not.
But the fundamental shift, the element that completely redefines the weekend experience for a landlocked Coloradan, is the introduction of saltwater.
Saltwater changes everything.
It does. It's not just a new playground. It's an entirely new biome that requires a completely different set of skills.
Right.
You suddenly have immediate access to Bellingham Bay, the San Juan Islands, and the Salish Sea. You're looking at sea kayaking right out of the downtown harbor, sailing, dropping crab pots, and taking weekend ferry trips out to the islands.
And for someone who has spent 20 years mastering the Rockies, this transition to a marine environment is an intellectual revitalization as much as a physical one.
Oh, that's a great point.
Because in Colorado, the concept of the weekend warrior is strictly vertical.
Right. You drive up the mountain, you climb the peak, you ski down the slope. Everything is measured in elevation gain.
Exactly. But when you move to the coast, your exploration becomes horizontal.
You trade the singular pursuit of vertical feet for the endless complexity of coastlines.
Yeah.
And you have to learn an entirely new language of nature. You can't just look at a trail map and go. You have to learn to read tide charts.
You have to understand how lunar cycles affect the currents in the bay.
Right. You have to learn maritime weather patterns because a sudden wind shift on 50-degree ocean water is a much different threat than a thunderstorm rolling over a 14,000-foot peak.
The geometry of the weekend just expands to accommodate this hybrid lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the proximity, you can literally drive up to Mount Baker, ski waist-deep powder in the morning, drive an hour back down to sea level, and be out on a sailboat in Bellingham Bay by late afternoon.
It's the ultimate multi-sport environment. I mean, imagine you spent your whole life driving a highly tuned, high-maintenance sports car that is incredibly fast, but is currently stuck in endless bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Okay.
That is the Colorado I-70 ski experience right now.
Very true.
Moving to Bellingham is like trading that sports car in for a rugged, reliable Jeep that also magically functions as a boat.
I love that analogy.
You aren't going as fast and you aren't as flashy, but suddenly you can go anywhere, over land or water, without sitting in traffic.
And that hybrid capability is exactly what cures the burnout.
Oh, yeah.
It resets the recreational palate.
Yes, exactly.
So, assuming a transplant has made peace with the tax math, they have embraced the Gore-Tex reality of the gray winters, and they're excited about trading vertical hikes for horizontal sailing. The most pressing logistical question remains.
Where do they actually unpack their boxes?
Exactly.
Because translating your life 1,300 miles across the country is incredibly jarring. You can't just pick a zip code at random.
No, you'll be miserable.
The local brokers facilitating these moves rely heavily on a concept called lifestyle mirroring.
Yes, lifestyle mirroring is crucial.
The goal is to mitigate the cultural shock by finding a neighborhood in Bellingham that closely replicates your Saturday morning routine back in Colorado.
Right.
If you used to walk to a specific coffee shop in Denver, you need to find a walkable coffee shop in Washington, or the isolation will set in rapidly.
We can actually break down the primary neighborhood trajectories based on the current migration patterns.
Oh, let's do that.
Let's look at the premium buyer first. If someone is relocating from a high net worth area, say, the Mapleton Hill Historic District in Boulder, or a mature high-end suburb in South Denver, they are looking for established infrastructure, mature tree canopies, large lots, and privacy.
Okay, so if that is your demographic, the data points you directly toward the Edgemoor neighborhood.
Edgemoor, exactly.
You drive through Edgemoor, and it feels like a premium, established enclave. It features winding, quiet roads, massive old-growth evergreens, and crucially, sweeping views overlooking Bellingham Bay and the San Juan Islands.
It offers the exclusivity and the quiet, natural integration that a high-end Boulder buyer really expects.
Right. But on the other hand, if a transplant is coming from a newer master planned community, think of the massive family oriented developments like Highlands Ranch south of Denver or Central Park. They have completely different priorities.
Very different. They aren't looking for winding historic roads.
No, they want modern amenities, newer construction, minimal yard maintenance, and hyper connectivity to pedestrian trails.
And for that buyer, the target is Barclay, or specifically the Barclay Village area.
Barclay.
Yeah. It is a master plan development that mirrors the efficiency of those newer Colorado suburbs. You have modern grocery stores, family-friendly infrastructure, and it is all seamlessly woven into the Bellingham Greenway Trail system.
So it's suburban living, but highly optimized for outdoor access.
Exactly. Hmm. But the most significant demographic of movers right now consists of remote professionals and empty nesters.
Oh, this is the big one.
It is. These are individuals who no longer need to commute to a traditional office. They're sitting in a downtown Denver high-rise or a trendy apartment in the Lohi neighborhood, and they want to retain that walkable, culturally rich, urban energy, but they want it scaled down and placed right next to the ocean.
So address the listener directly here. If you're sitting in a Denver high-rise right now working remotely, but you want to step outside and smell the ocean without worrying about mowing a lawn, which of these is actually your best bet?
For that remote worker who wants to step out their front door, walk to an independent bookstore, grab an artisanal coffee, and smell the salt air without ever getting in a car, the destination is undeniably Fairhaven.
Fairhaven.
The relocation analyst perfectly described Fairhaven as having a smaller, saltier, bolder downtown energy.
A saltier, bolder. I like that.
Right. It's historic brick buildings, cobblestone accents, high-end restaurants, and immediate access to the waterfront and the ferry terminal.
And finally, for the creatives, the academics, and the younger remote workers who want character-filled homes and a fiercely independent car-light lifestyle, the migration flows into the Sehome and Columbia neighborhoods.
Yes.
These areas are anchored by Western Washington University. They sit on a hill overlooking the bay, filled with century-old craftsman houses, steep, narrow streets, and a vibrant, slightly gritty, heavily academic energy.
They're great neighborhoods.
You know, breaking down these neighborhoods raises a really fascinating, almost inevitable economic question.
What is that?
Well, if you take hundreds or thousands of highly paid remote working Coloradans and you inject them directly into places like Fairhaven or Sehome, they are bringing their Denver salaries and their Boulder expectations with them.
Oh, inevitably.
They are going to demand gigabit fiber, internet, upscale organic markets, and boutique fitness studios. The sheer influx of that specific demographic is going to fundamentally alter the fabric of those established neighborhoods.
It creates a classic gentrification feedback loop.
Exactly.
The amenities that the transplants demand incentivize local developers to build those specific businesses. As those businesses open, the neighborhood becomes even more attractive to the next wave of remote workers from out of state, which further drives up the housing prices and pushes out the original lower-income residents.
The migration shapes the destination just as powerfully as the destination attracts the migration.
It really does, which makes getting a foothold in these specific neighborhoods incredibly competitive.
I can imagine.
Because picking the perfect neighborhood on paper or successfully mapping your lifestyle from Denver to Fairhaven is just theory. The actual execution, buying a $660,000 house in a high-demand, tight inventory market while you're sitting at a desk two states away, is a logistical nightmare.
And this brings us to the mechanics of the 1,300-mile leap of faith, the remote buying logistics.
The logistical reality of this pipeline has forced the real estate industry in places like Whatcom County to evolve rapidly.
How so?
Well, the traditional out-of-state buying process, where a buyer looks at a few photos online, flies out for a weekend, tours 10 houses, and makes an offer, is completely obsolete.
Really? Completely?
Completely. The inventory moves far too quickly. By the time a Colorado buyer books a flight to see a newly listed home in Fairhaven, that home is already under contract.
Wow. So the entire process has shifted to remote buying.
Yes.
But you can't just rely on listing photos. I mean, we all know the tricks of real estate photography.
Oh, absolutely.
They use hyper-wide-angle lenses that make a tiny bedroom look like a ballroom. They turn all the lights on, open all the blinds, and shoot at the exact golden hour so the house looks like a glowing sanctuary.
Yep.
If you drop $600,000 based on those highly edited photos, you are gambling your financial future.
And to mitigate that immense risk, the local brokers who specialize in these relocations have adopted a strategy of extreme transparency.
Very dreamy transparency.
They utilize unedited, live, video-first showings. The buyer is sitting in their Denver apartment on a FaceTime call, and the local agent is physically walking through the Bellingham property.
Okay.
And the agent's job is not to sell the highlights. The agent's job is to ruthlessly expose the flaws.
The psychology of this is brilliant.
It is, isn't it?
Because if an agent walks into a house with the camera and immediately says, okay, The photos didn't show this, but the house backs up to a surprisingly loud arterial road. Let me hold the phone out the window so you can hear the traffic. Or they point the camera at the ceiling and say, there is a very clear patch water stain here, and the natural light in this living room is actually quite terrible. It radically shifts the dynamic of trust.
Exactly. Paradoxically, by highlighting the worst aspects of the property, the agent validates the entire transaction.
It proves they aren't just trying to make a quick commission.
Right. The buyer's greatest fear in a remote transaction is the unknown variable.
Hmm.
If the local expert is willing to show you the ugly, wet crawl space, you suddenly believe them when they tell you the foundation is solid. It replaces the sanitized perfection of a 3D walkthrough with raw, unedited reality.
Okay, let's unpack this, though. Buying a house unseen based on a FaceTime call sounds terrifying.
It is terrifying for a lot of people.
Right, because there are limits to video. You can show a water stain on an iPhone, but what if the house smells weird? You absolutely cannot video tour a weird smell.
Very true.
A house might look structurally perfect, but if you walk in the front door and it smells like an old ashtray, or it has that deep, unmistakable mildew scent of a damp basement, the video will never capture it.
Which is why the video tour is just the top layer of a much deeper ecosystem of trust.
Okay, what else is there?
The remote buyer must rely on an interconnected network of local professionals. The agent acts as the eyes. But the buyer also has to hire trusted, hyper-local inspectors to act as the nose and the hands.
The nose and the hands.
Yes. The inspector goes in not just to check the electrical panel, but to report back on the ambient moisture levels, the smells, the subtle structural sags that a camera lens distorts. The buyer is effectively outsourcing their sensory perception of the home.
And the timeline for all of this is brutally compressed. To actually win a house in this environment, the Colorado buyer must be entirely pre-approved with a lender, their earnest money must be liquid and ready to wire, and they must be comfortable e-signing a legally binding offer within hours of that FaceTime call ending.
Hours, not days.
It is a massive leap of faith, built entirely on digital infrastructure and the verified reputation of the local professionals on the ground.
It forces us to really consider the future of this type of interstate migration. The gap of the unseen is shrinking.
Yeah.
We are moving toward a reality where environmental sensors in a home could transmit the exact humidity levels, the air quality index, and the acoustic decibel readings of the neighborhood directly to a remote buyer's dashboard.
Oh, wow. That would be incredible.
But until that technology is ubiquitous, the entire multi-million dollar pipeline relies on extreme, localized human honesty.
So we have unpacked the math, the weather, the geography, and the logistics.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. So what does this all mean for you? If you are that exhausted Coloradan sitting in gridlock on I-25, looking at a sky full of smoke and wondering if the Pacific Northwest is your escape hatch, let's run the final recap.
Let's do it.
You are making a highly calculated lifestyle trade. You are willingly surrendering 300 days of blistering, dry sunshine in exchange for a lush, green, sea-level marine environment where you never have to shovel snow or breathe wildfire smoke again.
You are accepting a structural financial shift.
Big time.
You are taking on a property tax burden that is nearly double what you are used to, but you are completely eliminating your state income tax. You are leveraging that 0% tax rate to maximize the cash flow of your W-2 salary or your retirement distributions.
And you are trading the crowded corporate vertical grind of the I-70 ski resorts for the unpretentious, record-breaking deep powder of Mount Baker and the endless horizontal exploration of the saltwater bays.
And you are doing all of this with your eyes wide open.
Right. You aren't chasing a myth. You understand the heavy, wet reality of the 5-month gray winter. And you understand the intense, hyper-competitive logistics required to actually secure a home in a place like Fairhaven or Edgemoor.
It is a masterclass in pragmatic relocation.
It really is.
But, you know, stepping back from the logistics and the math for a second, this entire phenomenon raises a vital and perhaps uncomfortable philosophical question for anyone participating in this migration.
Uncomfortable how?
Well, think about it. The Front Range of Colorado was once the ultimate sanctuary. Is the place people move to for open space, clean air, and a wild lifestyle.
Right.
But millions of people move there to find it. And in the process, the sheer volume of migration created the traffic, the skyrocketing housing costs, and the crowded trails that you are now fleeing.
Oh, wow. You loved it to death, and now you have to leave it.
It's exactly the risk. So the question becomes, if you take your equity, your high remote salary, and your expectations, and you move to Bellingham, specifically to escape the pressures of Colorado. How do you ensure that you don't inadvertently bring those exact same pressures with you?
That is the ultimate question.
Right. As thousands of high-earning, climate-conscious individuals seek out these new sanctuaries in the Pacific Northwest, how long until Bellingham experiences the exact same gridlock and the exact same pricing crises that broke the Front Range?
Yeah.
How do we integrate into these final, pristine environments without inevitably destroying the very things that drew us to them in the first place?